basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Bryant for the win. Bang! James puts up the three. Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. 5 tenths of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And today we talk about Adam Silver's NDA. This is a topic I've been wanting to discuss with you for quite a while. Adam Silver was David Stern, who's the commissioner that you and I grew up on, his deputy commissioner for quite a long time before taking the reins in February of 2014. And one of the early defining moments was with the LA Clippers owner, Donald Sterling, and basically banishing him from the league and forcing him to sell. And now we find ourselves 12 years later with him embroiled in another situation with another Clippers owner, with the guy who took over in Steve Ballmer. And like I said, this is something I've been wanting to talk with you for a while. And I've noticed that pretty much everybody seems to hate the commissioner of their favorite sport. I don't think commissioners are typically very popular. They do, in many ways, just represent the owners. And that said, I think there's a pretty big difference between the commission that we grew up with and Silver. And I'd like to spend today just talking about what a commissioner's job is and Adam Silver has done in his position, both good and bad. So I kick that idea to you, Div. Like, what is the commissioner's job in the first place?
Yeah, this is such an interesting topic to me. I think that one of the disconnects and why fans often don't like the commissioner is that they view the commissioner's job as one thing and the commissioner's job is actually something else. And so I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that the commissioner is a conduit and a face for the owners. The commissioner actually works for the owners. And when the commissioner's contract is renewed, it goes to a vote to all of the league owners, essentially the governors, and they approve whether or not a commissioner stays on. They approve if he's going to get a raise. And I think that one of the side notes, which we'll get to later about like the aspiration stuff with the Clippers, is one of the pieces of reporting that came out recently was one of the reasons why it's taking as long as it is because the league is trying to come up with a punishment that they think would be accepted by everyone, including Steve Ballmer, which is so weird. Imagine being a student in a classroom and basically thrashing the entire room or something. And then the teacher is sort of sitting there contemplating what your punishment was going to be to make it accept, like something that me, the person who wrecked the classroom, would deem acceptable. You know what I mean? It's weird, right?
Well, this illustrates the fundamental conflict of interest that you were just talking about. The person that Adam Silver is supposed to be punishing in this, he works for them, and he's the richest, probably most or right up there with the most powerful owners in the league. So imagine you, D, having to discipline your boss, right? And then come to back to work on Monday and be like, so how's it going? What do you need from me? You know, like there's a conflict of interest that's fundamentally within this.
To get back to what I was saying about the difference between what fans might think the commissioner's job is and what the commissioner's job actually is, I think that job is making the owners as much money as possible and having the league sort of stay on a trajectory where the value of the league and the value of the individual teams continues to increase so that his stakeholder group, the owners, are happy. And I think what fans would say, or at least what I might say, is the role of the commissioner partly shares a Venn diagram with that idea, is like growing the sport, growing its popularity. But also there's like an image idea where you want the league to seem like it's the it thing.
Culturally relevant. Yes.
Basketball was the cool sport. And I get football's always been the titan in terms of the leader and popularity, so much so that the NFL isn't only king, but college football has always been a super important sport as well. But when I was a kid and growing up and starting to follow sports, the NBA was the league of Magic Johnson and Larry Bird and Dr. J and then Michael Jordan. And then after that, we get into the Shaqs and the Kobe and all of the players who sort of continue to build up that idea of coolness. And this goes back to even before that era where all those cool players from the 70s, this sport is just inherently cool. And that's what basketball always was to me. And I think as a fan, I'm always looking for the NBA to be the innovator, the league that's cool, the quote unquote popular sport. And I think that within that, that's partly based off of the commissioner's vision and stewardship of the league. And I thought David Stern, what he probably did best amongst all commissioners of all sports from the time that I've been alive, is centering players from the perspective of personality and how player popularity would drive the popularity of the sport. The whole idea of the superstar being the center of the universe of where the NBA was going. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts about A, to answer your own question, but B, to see if you agree with this idea and where Adam Silver sits within that bigger idea.
So I think you hit the nail on the head when you said his job is to make money for the owners. And part of that, it's a short-term, long-term thing for me. So the sport being cool and being culturally relevant converts into money long-term. But the things that can help make that happen often work counter to making money in the short term. So to give you an example, the league just started with these new TV partners last year. And you got like four different places that you got to go to watch a game if you want to watch it. And somebody asked him, you know, what if somebody wants to be able to watch the game but can't afford these apps and all of the subscriptions that come with that? And his answer was, I'm paraphrasing, but basically, well, you can go watch highlights on YouTube if you want, you know? And he's both right about that, but we're not operating in the monoculture era that we used to. With social media and just the way that media has gone over the last 10 to 20 years, we used to have this, all of us would watch the same thing on TV and have this shared experience, that our algorithms are so personalized that I think just sports in general have dropped in terms of their cultural importance, because you have plenty of options to be entertained outside of just that and in very hyper-specific type of ways. But what happens is if you can drop off of the radar too much in that respect, then you're losing future fans. One of the last things that we did before I had left the Lakers was we were doing this big research project on Gen Alpha, the younger, I think it's like 12 and under. I think they're 14 or 15 and under now, and what their consumption habits were like and where sports fell into that. And there was a noticeable drop off between kids and where sports fall in the overall hierarchy, and they're trying to figure that out. This is counterbalanced, though, by that first point, D, of needing to make short-term money. And I know one of the concerns of people who work in the league, they see that the infiltration of private equity, and the Celtics are a great example of this, into the sport as being this sort of really nefarious thing that works against a lot of the making the sport cool, because it's about, rather than making money off of the TV contracts or merchandise and ticket sales, those are important, but the things that's really important to the owners is franchise valuation. How much is your franchise worth? How much could you sell it for? And you want to bump that as much as possible. And so that can work against the idea of even winning now, right? And just what are the things that we can do to boost that? And so in terms of Adam Silver's place in this whole thing, I think he's done a good job of cashing in, right, with this TV deal. I think the league is very popular over social media in ways that is a credit to him and the league, that I think is the best thing that they've done in terms of that long-term strategy of attracting newer type of fans. But I also think some of the turkeys they've let buy teams and some of the ownership groups that have come in recently have been very, very questionable. So let's go to break here. Want to come back and start getting into more of Adam Silver's tenure.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One thing that I was thinking about, I'll pivot here in a second, but the monoculture idea is super interesting to me because there's a reason why the league continues to highlight players like Steph Curry and LeBron James and Kevin Durant even. It's because they are the last vestiges of sports history as being monoculture, right? And so they are the one name, or in KD's part, two-letter name, of the guys where they were appointment viewing and they were players who come from that previous era, the David Stern era of the NBA. And there's a reason why Adam Silver was sort of like, you know, what we're really waiting for is for LeBron James to make his decision so that we could finish the schedule. And people laughed at that. And for several years, I think people have mocked the idea of the Lakers, for example, getting so many national TV games, or why is it a certain way with the Warriors when their record has been what it's been the last few years, where they've got high expectations, but they've, I think in three of the last 4 years, they finished either eighth, ninth, or 10th or something like that. But it's because players like Steph and LeBron drive interest in a way that like younger players don't always, because of their name recognition going back to a period of time where we all did watch the same things over and over and over again. And those water cooler conversations that used to exist in office environments that barely exist at all anymore, right? Where people are in hybrid schedules and working two or three days a week and maybe not even the same two or three days a week as their colleagues in person, that it's a tricky environment now. And so driving things more towards social media and these consumable clips that are 30 seconds to a minute long that might rot our attention spans, but keep us engaged with the sport, but not in a way where there's this through line of this singular talent that you have to watch where you're seeking out that single person. It's just a different time. And it's very interesting to see the league progress in this way and evolve in this way, considering the league that we grew up in.
Doesn't the commissioner have a responsibility to help cultivate the, because this is a ticking clock right here. Like you said, they're squeezing the last bits of the orange that they can out of the LeBrons and Stephs, but that's got a finite window to it. And I mean, this is probably above both of our pay grades, but they got to resolve that and they've got to make the younger players cool or the sport itself cool. Because like you said, the NBA has always been that focus on individuals rather than the team. But if you look at the NFL or college football, it's way more about the team and the program that is partially part of the nature of the sport, but also part of how it's marketed. What can Adam Silver do to sort of bring that next generation along?
Well, this is the tricky part. One of the places that my mind goes is the point that you made earlier about Adam Silver talking about the league's new TV partners, right? The TV contracts were a boon for the league, clearly. These were multi-billion dollar relationships that have been extended for half a decade or however long, a decade long. And with new partners that are, I think, invigorated by the idea of having live sports on their platforms, right? Particularly the streaming platforms like Peacock, which is NBC, but Peacock and Amazon, right? But we were talking about this the other day about the salary cap and how it's actually not rising to the same degree that they thought it was going to rise, right? They were baking in 10% raises in the salary cap every single year. And this past year, it only grew at 7.5%. And next year, they did a much shallower forecast, I think, of only 5.5% growth. So that's basically cut in half, Pete, from where it was supposed to be. And based off some of the reporting that I've read, one of the places where the shortfall is coming from is from local TV contracts. And those not delivering to the level that people thought that they would or that they should, right? And so the failing of the regional sports networks, I think, is also tied to what the commissioner's job is and popularity and making everyone money. Because if the regional sports network infrastructure is not there, then it's one thing to be like, every Thursday night, we can watch the NBA nationally here. And Wednesday nights, it will be here. And Saturday nights, it'll be here. And we get in a rhythm that way. But Pete, you and I grew up in the era of Prime Ticket and KCAL, right? We watched every game locally. And I knew that before a Laker game, I might catch some surfing or some beach volleyball was going to be on Prime Ticket.
Paul, right? Sunderland, shout out. Yeah,
yeah, man. And yeah. I was watching St. John Smith and Randy Stoklos do their thing. And then I'd watch Magic Johnson, you know, go behind his back and throw a no-look pass. And that was sort of the rhythm of my basketball viewing. And in the same way that nationally people might hear the two Law and Order bells that are all deep, and then they'd feel that vibe of, you know, what this is.
Yeah.
But locally, there needs to be a relationship between the fan and the local broadcast. And the idea of growing the game locally rather than just growing it nationally. And the lag of what's happening locally, I think, is how you get national fans in the first place. Like, you can build out this idea of popularity around, oh, well, Wemby is the next up-and-coming thing, or what is Cooper Flagg going to be? And I think the league is in great hands when it comes to the young players. And you and I think, oh, man, even this draft class that just came out, we're talking about how there's like 15, 20 dudes in this class where we're just like, these guys can play and they're going to be good and be in the league for a decade plus. But those players who are lower down the list, Cameron Carr, for example, you want Lakers fans to fall in love with Cameron Carr because he's going to be a longtime player for them. But that interest is going to be local. You're not going to be some kid in Chicago that grows up being like, I love Cameron Carr. You're not watching him on a day-to-day basis. And part of the disconnect, I think, in terms of the trajectory of the league, and one of the things that interests me a fair amount, is what's happening in the local markets, and are people even able to watch their games? I've heard Brian Windhorst talk about how he lives in Omaha, in Nebraska, and he's like, I can't get league pass for the Nuggets or for the Timberwolves or for several other teams because all of their markets infringe upon each other. And so he's like, I can't even watch these teams on league pass. And so there's a bunch of local fans that get screwed out of even being able to watch their teams. And so I think that's a problem too. And that's Adam Silver's NDA as well.
I heard Tim Harris talk about this extensively on several occasions about how basically half the league was having their regional sports contract expire without anything really renewing on the horizon that was anywhere close to what it used to be. But this isn't really something that the NBA is responsible for. This is a saying I say sometimes, is it's like, it's not your fault, but it is your problem. Like, local cable is dying on a lot of levels. People are consuming entertainment more through their phones and through the internet than ever before. And so how to do that, I don't know. I think it's a brilliant question of what the league can do to help with that.
This is why the NFL is king, because they build out local broadcasts through national broadcast partners, right? And so they have partnerships with Fox and CBS to carry games weekly. And those are national partners, but regionally, you then watch your 49ers game on KTVU or whatever the local thing is for the Fox affiliate here in the Bay Area. And that's how you get your local team. But it's still driven at the national level through these major broadcasting partners. And the NBA has been so much more niche in terms of this. It's just like, you're on NBC Sports, whatever, yada, yada, yada. So you're not actually watching anything on your local NBC channel. You still need cable to watch your team.
I find it difficult to compare to the NFL, though, because it's a once a week sport that the vast majority of the games are on the same day every week. You can build your Sunday around. If you're an NFL fan, you know what you're doing on Sunday. That's not as applicable to the NBA, you know? And so I think that this is certainly a problem, and that there are places they can look to the NFL, but it's way more like baseball and hockey in terms of the cadence and rhythm of the games. And I think it's difficult to do what you're talking about there on 82 games a year or minus whatever national games that you have. So let's go to our second break here. Come back, keep it going about this, and I want to talk about some of the on-court stuff and beyond with Adam Silver.
Pete, I'd love to get your thoughts about the on-court stuff because I feel like one of the ways that like diehard fans love to complain most is about like the viewing experience of watching a single game and what that looks like from a TV product idea. Because I think if you talk to fans, diehard fans, you will find two diverging thoughts. One is that the game is as talented as ever. The players are as talented as ever. They're as good as ever. And then the viewing experience is not as good as ever. And there are all of these ideas that every fan would have about how to make watching an NBA game better. And I think that this is Adam Silver's problem. It is how do you get the most out of a super talented league and super talented and exciting players with a TV product that is not up to snuff or has not advanced at the same rate as the talent and skill of the players?
One of the most common gripes right now here in August about the NBA is about the Kawhi aspiration stuff. Why the hell is this taking so long? And I'm like, it takes these turkeys 15 minutes to review a play and come up with a call. How long do you think it's going to take this multi-pronged investigation to take? And that's one of my biggest complaints about the viewing experience is I find Adam Silver's NBA to be overly legalistic and overly officious. I also think it's important to throw the Tim Donaghy scandal into this and that being very present of mind for Adam Silver. If you hear him talk, especially early on, he felt a great compulsion toward making sure that the legitimacy of the NBA was upheld, right? That everybody felt like it was on the up and up, that it wasn't refs throwing games or anything like that. And so there has been such a spike toward everything has to be exactly right. And it doesn't matter if it takes 20 minutes to resolve this. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but basketball is fundamentally a flow sport, D. It's a back and forth, fast-paced action type of sport that there are far too many breaks within the game that take way too long. Like one of the simplest solutions I'd love to see is put a shot clock on the refs. If the whole point of, because we remember a league that didn't have replay, and I like replay. I'm glad that we have it. It is important to get things right. But it's also important to keep the game flowing from an entertainment standpoint. And the whole idea at the very beginning of instituting replay was if it's not obvious, then we're going to stay with the call that was made on the floor. How long does it take to make that call? Especially with the cameras that we've got nowadays and all the angles, and you can see fairly quickly what the call is going to be. They need to put a shot clock on just the breaks in the action in a lot of ways. I do think that a positive thing that's happened is over the last year, there's new TV partners. They weren't perfect, but both Prime and Peacock, I thought, did a great job of covering the league in ways that I thought their national partners, especially TNT, had really betrayed them, and ESPN as well, in terms of making it a good viewing experience for everybody. And just like the degree that I would just be like, I'm going to watch this game on mute because y'all are fucking annoying and talking about tamales or whatever the hell. You're having a podcast while the game's going on, and some of us actually like this sport. So that, to me, are some of the things. What goes through your mind in terms of improving the viewing experience?
Putting a clock on reviews or a timer on reviews. I also think centralizing the review system where the referees in-house could be the ones to make the announcement to everyone, but sort of like, okay, you guys got 25 seconds and somebody, maybe multiple people in some center in Secaucus or wherever it's going to be, looking at every angle instantly. Because one of the things that I think about review, it's not possible to entirely escape the idea that I'm the one who made this call. Now I've got to go back and look for evidence on why I was wrong.
Yeah, it's like the police officer who pulled you over also being the judge in your case, right?
Yes. Don't make me adjudicate the thing that I saw in real time a certain way. And there are times where I feel like, oh, no, you're definitely not going to overturn this. It's too close. One of the things that I think is most important, though, Pete, in general, and this goes back to the review process, is essentially making it so the end of games can go as smoothly and quickly as possible, considering the amount of like stoppages that can be built into end of game basketball, right? In terms of the fouling and the free throws and the ability to review more things in the last 2 minutes than what you would review in other parts of the game. You get to the most important part of the game, and with that importance, you want to get everything right. But that overly litigious idea of making sure that everything is officiated precisely can lead to that slowing down, that if you know an NBA basketball game, you're like, okay, well, there's 3 minutes left. It's a 2-point game. This last 3 minutes is going to take at least 15 minutes to finish, at least. And it could take 20 minutes or a half hour if there's a review of a really touchy out-of-bounds play, or if there's a flagrant foul that someone needs to review. And all of that stuff, Pete, are things where I don't want to sound like the guy that's just like, well, my sensibilities are perfect, tune this thing to me. But sure, that's how fans watch sports, is like, well, they want things to go the way that they want it to go. And I think all fans would agree, we want it to be smoother at the end of games, especially.
It's funny to point about like tuning to your personal sensibilities. I do think the commissioner is maybe the only person that does have that to a degree. Like, I saw this funny TikTok or short video of like Adam Silver's response to making anything better is, well, put him in a tournament. Right. So we've got the in-season tournament, and there's been this, you know, I've lamented for a few years that we've lost a bit of the juice to the regular season. In part, my argument is that we have too many teams making the playoffs, making each individual game just less valuable in the overall scheme of things. So it's like, who cares at the end of the day if you win or lose this game? And really what makes sports fun are the stakes. One of the best games I've ever seen was a JB high school basketball game that was like Division 4 game, but because like everybody was going so hard and all this wacky shit happened, like it was just one of my favorite games I've ever seen. And so that's what makes sports fun, is having stakes on them. And so even though you've got these amazing athletes that are as talented as ever, that when you reduce the stakes, that there's harm in that. But this has been something that, like you said, I don't have all the answers either. What are your thoughts on Adam Silver's attempts to sort of resolve this while also balancing, well, we've got a third of the league actively tanking, got the draft reforms and all of that. There is a lot to balance within this. And I'm curious your thoughts on how he's handled that.
I think that he's both used foresight and vision with the in-season tournament to try to juice up some stakes in different parts of the year that would allow teams to get their competitive juices flowing at certain parts of the season where it wasn't necessarily as high. Also being too reactionary in other places where it's just public opinion or the stuff about the draft and the tanking. I've been an NBA fan for long enough to know that almost all of these reactionary things that you do end up causing the owners more problems than what they anticipated at the beginning. And Amen. They end up having to shift things anyway, right? And so I remember the biggest thing ever was all of these guys making too much money over contracts that were too long, and we have to save the owners from themselves. And now we're at a part where we've got max contracts that nobody wants to pay, a super max that everyone thinks is too punitive, against an apron that no one wants to cross over because it's essentially a hard cap. And now there's so much league turnover with the players because the contracts are now too short. And it's just like, wait, what happened? We want these teams to play together longer and have more freedom to gel, but the contracts were too long. So all of this stuff is like comical to me because you end up arguing against a point that you were arguing for just 6 years ago.
Yeah, they get entangled further and further down. I feel like increasingly you have to have a law degree to understand the sport, like in whether it's the officiating or the rules around the cap, or just there's so many parts of it that are overly litigious, overly officious, that are absolutely born from
them trying to put out the previous fire that was trying to put out a couple of other things. You know, their intentions are good, but it ends up causing three more problems. And now we find ourselves in this place where it's like, everybody has to be a cap expert now to understand who their team can trade for. It makes it less fun.
Can I pivot here before we wrap up, Pete? Because I'd love to close on this idea of the scandal. One of the things that you said about the Tim Donaghy stuff and how you position Silver as having the integrity of the league being something that he values a ton. And it's interesting because I was nodding along with that because I agree, but then I think about how the league has gotten in bed with all these gambling sites and everything else as sponsors. And then we've now had issues with former players and current players, in some cases, getting in trouble with the feds for doing stuff in terms of not match fixing, but fixing in terms of over-unders and things like
Malik
that.
Malik Beasley fighting his ass off to get a rebound. Did you ever see
or
that?
Not get a rebound, running away in the opposite direction as the ball is bouncing
the under,
him.
Yeah.
And so you've got situations like that, and then obviously the aspiration stuff. And so it feels like Silver is in the middle of the tempest right now in terms of scandal. And, you know, he just like you said, he came into the league and scandal hit right away with the Donald Sterling stuff. And he acquitted himself well in that case, I think, and built himself up a ton of goodwill. It feels like now, with the gambling probe stuff and with what's going on with aspiration, all of that goodwill seemingly gone now.
Yeah.
And he's embroiled in some things now. And I'm wondering, to wrap up the pod, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this final point about this is also Adam Silver's league, and he's going to have to navigate this and do it well. Because if he doesn't, the league could end up with a stain on it in a way where it's just like the competitive balance and the integrity of the league and people sort of following the rules in this case. It's like, this is the most important thing for the sort of sanctity of what we follow in terms of sport, right?
This is happening all across our society, all the way up through politics. And it comes down to how much do we actually care about the rule of law? And if you send a message with whatever the aspiration ruling is that you can get away with stuff, and the evidentiary standard is so high that you have to basically have Steve Ballmer on tape being like, Kawhi, here's some money for the crimes we're going to commit together, right? Like, if you send a message to everybody that's like, if you could just be a little bit slick about it, there are no actual rules, which frankly is increasingly my opinion about how the world works. I don't like that, though. I would like to have a league where everybody's operating under the same agreed-upon rules that they came up with in the CBA. And he's got to be very careful with this, because if you come out of this, like one of the reporting from Michael Grange, who's a reporter for the Raptors, is that, you know, part of the idea is that they can help Steve Ballmer save face in all of this, which speaks to the conflict of interest that we were talking about earlier, while also rendering a punishment that's significant enough to dissuade other teams from doing this. But if it's not significant enough to have other teams be like, no, we don't want to, it's open season. Like, there are no laws, there are no rules that you've talked about creating future problems by trying to put one out now and then the unintended consequences of that. They got to be very careful with this, because they send that message, we're in a whole new league. All right, D, this has been fun. We will be back tomorrow, get back on track, I think, with the Lakers. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one. Miss it. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Albert Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.